Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
A listening post was held recently in Marion County so local officials and residents could discuss responses to our nation's opioid epidemic. What do we need to know? Let's go in depth with Peter Komendowski, president of a Partnership for a Drug-Free Iowa, Staff Sergeant Adam Kilgore, Lieutenant Colonel Chuck Connors, and Sergeant Melissa Welch with the Iowa National Guard Counter Drug Task Force, Kevin Vanderskill, and Christy Kalkowski with the U.S. Attorney's Office, Department of Justice, Dale Woolery with the Governor's Office of Drug Control Policy, and Marion County Sheriff Jason Sandholt. So, Peter, why were you in Knoxville today, the whole group? This was a really interesting presentation. Can you tell us why you were here?
Well, Knoxville, like other communities in Iowa, has an inherent capability to be able to deal with creating healthy communities and address problems that affect the community. And we're here to help provide a conduit for resources and maybe some support so that we can amp up the work the community does to deal with things like the opioid crisis and other crises relating to substance abuse that we're facing throughout Iowa.
And why? Why a strong focus on opioids? And I'm just going to say how ignorant I am about it. I hear about an opioid epidemic. I hear about people in the county that have overdosed. And to me, it seems like it's just happened in the last year or two. Can you tell us exactly what the crisis is? I mean, how bad is it?
People have problems with addiction and drugs. Usually there is a very complicated scenario that unleashes that problem. There is a brand of medications called opioid pain relievers that were sort of the next best miracle cure for pain that really became popular starting about 15 years ago and escalated up till recently, which we're now learning have tremendously negative side effects to people because they're very addictive. And we saw in America over 52,000 people die from opioid pain medications and heroin, which are intrinsically connected. People that get addicted to opioids, even good people, when they can't get them anymore, will turn to heroin.
And do we know why people do this?
Well, we know why it's an epidemic in this country, because the drugs were actually given to people by doctors. And the risk of addiction and this progression towards heroin and overdoses was not known. People weren't informed. So it's easy if you have a child and you don't want them to do drugs and you say, hey, this drug's bad, marijuana's bad, alcohol's bad, you shouldn't do this. In this case, because it came from doctors, it sort of got around all of those safety measures. And by the time we realized people were dying, we're now going back to doctors and saying, time out, what can we do to stop this epidemic? We need your help. And we need the help of the entire community to let everybody know how dangerous this threat is.
Well, why don't we know?
We're talking about something that at the base of it is medication and can work wonders, help a lot of people, arguably save lives, but it can also take lives. So depending on how it's used, It can vary. And so that mixed message alone makes it very difficult to work with, not to mention that the supply of prescription pain medication, when we're talking about that part of the opioid problem, it's coming from physicians and other prescribers. It's not coming from drug cartels in Mexico. Unfortunately, when some people get addicted to the pain pills, they may have started with an injury, used over time, become addicted. And after a while, if they can't afford the pain pills, they may wind up turning to the street and getting heroin or worse. And that stuff's far no better, and it's far worse in some cases as far as its lethality. So I think we have conflicting messages that are out, misunderstandings about how addictive these substances can be, how dangerous they are. One thing that I've been told by a pain doc, and I think it's part of what we need to get across, is that all of us, myself included, we need to do a better job of respecting our medications, We can't assume they all are like aspirin and treat them like aspirin. We have to be careful with them. We have to secure them in the home. We have to take them as they're prescribed, as intended. When we're done with them, we need to properly dispose of them through safe disposal programs like the take-back program. And then we need to be talking with our children and our grandchildren, those young loved ones in our families, to make sure they know that whether it's legal or illegal isn't important these days. You just don't want to take anything if it's not for you and from either a parent or a trusted adult, which may be a physician. But there are a lot of medications out there that may come from other sources. You do not want to take those because, as I said earlier, ultimately they can be deadly.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with participants at the listening post recently held about our nation's opioid epidemic. Do people think, well, it came from a doctor, so it's going to be okay, it's pure, et cetera? Does that happen?
I think that some of the individuals who are taking this take it because it is prescribed by a doctor. It's given to them to help them. But at some point in time, individuals do become addicted, and then they search for other sources. They may search through multiple doctor sources, multiple pharmacies, or they may even turn to buying the pain medication on the street. But ultimately, as the CDC statistics have shown, 45% of those who are currently addicted to heroin started on prescription opioid drugs. And so when they may have started as a pain medication properly prescribed by a physician, it ultimately can lead to very dangerous results.
Okay, and so this situation, it might be somebody like me that just goes into the doctor's office that gets hooked, as opposed to maybe somebody that as a kid got hooked up into the whole drug industry and the whole drug culture. We're talking about a whole new group of people.
It's a combination of all of those. We see people who have injuries, back injuries, especially who are provided with this prescription, people who have athletic injuries and are provided with this prescription, but we also see college students. We see high school students who are taking it from their grandparents' medicine cabinets, and it affects all aspects of society. It's not one particular socioeconomic group, but it's affecting all of society.
A few of you here are from the U.S. Attorney's Office. Forgive my ignorance, but it seems like I see U.S. attorneys putting people in jail, but you're out in front of it on this, is that right?
Correct. We do prosecute cases involving these. A few years ago, we prosecuted Dr. Twiner in Newton, and he spent, I believe, 5 years in prison for overprescribing these types of drugs. Within the more recent past, I prosecuted Mark Graziano, a pharmacist in Des Moines who diverted hundreds of thousands of hydrocodone tablets. But in addition to prosecution, the Department of Justice has realized that we can't prosecute our way out of this problem. So we are intentionally spending more time on crime prevention and education.
And what's your role?
My role as a community outreach coordinator is to go out and wherever there's a need, if someone has a need to talk to our office about building coalitions within the community, building those relationships so that information exchange between law enforcement, between the hospitals, between the medical professionals to bring together those folks so they can get together at a table and try to do creative problem solving to address the problem.
Well, that's what happened today.
It's very exciting what happened today because you have a group of communities of interest coming together in one place. There's a critical need here to solve a problem, and you have just a huge amount of experience and knowledge to attack that problem.
All right, so I'm in the hospital. I have an operation. How fast can I get addicted?
Well, I think it can happen very quickly. We're talking probably days, worst case scenario. But for some people, it does take longer. Part of the problem is we don't know who's prone to addiction and under what circumstances. It will vary by person. The CDC guidelines, the new CDC guidelines, are encouraging the use of prescription opioids for short-term acute pain, not for long-term or chronic pain. And my understanding is that was the original intent. But over time, they've become used for long-term chronic types of pain conditions. That increases the risk that someone would get addicted in a period of days or over a period of weeks. So I think we've seen a slow burn on this opioid addiction problem over the years, and now we have a large number of people. We've awakened and realized a lot of people have become addicted, and a growing number are getting to the point of overdosing, and some of them have tragically died from those overdoses, and we want to prevent that.
There is an important point. Common understanding today in the medical community is that these were supposed to be very short term, 4 to 5 days. If you are taking opioid pain medications for more than 5 days, you are now on the verge of taking a risk with the opioid fulfilling your body's demands of addiction and avoiding withdrawal more so than pain relief. And that's a very, very blurred line. So quite frankly, if I'm going to speak about raising the alarm about opioids, if you're taking opioids more than 4 or 5 days, you need to go to your doctor and say, what can I do for pain where I'm not exposed to the risk of opioids and addiction?
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with participants at the listening post recently held about our nation's opioid epidemic. And so that should resonate with people, a lot of people in the community, shouldn't it?
You know, you would think so. I think what we're looking at is trying to develop a body of research. We know this is really risky. 52,000 people died last year in America from these drugs. They are not to be taken lightly. And I think that's one of the reasons we look at partners like the Office of Drug Control Policy that gets a lot of great statistics and data, the Department of Justice and the Attorney General's Office, and the National Guard, who really has a large team of people working with communities to start figuring out not just what the risks are, because they know them, but how we best can reduce the effect of those risks on our communities.
Okay, so why is the Guard involved?
The Guard involved because as members of the National Guard, we're part of our community. And our job is to assist and protect and defend those members of our community. So we're authorized by Congress to do what we do, and we've been doing this, supporting communities in the drug fight since 1989. Whether that be helping law enforcement, or whether it be helping prevention efforts to curb the fight of drugs, we've been here with our partners supporting them for over 25 years.
Well, that's quite an investment in the community that I guess I'm used to seeing people at the Armory and pitching in and drilling, and if there's floods and things like that, you're all there ready to help in some natural disaster, but I hadn't thought of your role in this.
Well, that's all part of it. Being there for the community in any capacity they need is a huge part of why we all join the Guard. This specific role of counter drug is we branch out within the community. And we help in whatever role we can provide, whether that's helping coalitions, helping law enforcement manage all the information they have coming in, the data, whether it is setting up classes for them. In any way we can be that bridge or that branch for what they need, we'll try to provide it.
What did you think after the meeting?
I thought it was a very wide-range community approach to this. As a civil operator, I work with local communities throughout the state to build plans and to make sure they are sustainable and to make sure that everybody is brought together as a whole to battle an opioid abuse or a substance abuse. It doesn't matter what it is, we're there to help with that. And we are more of a facilitator, and as a civil operator, we are on the prevention side to help those and to combat it at the front lines.
Sheriff Sandholt, what were your impressions?
Obviously, I'm very pleased that there was a lot of community leaders here. This is a great opportunity. Obviously, we've got a lot of professionals here that are very experienced in the opiate side of things, and it was very important for me for us to be proactive. It's I didn't want it 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, be having a meeting where all of a sudden it's like, oh my goodness, why didn't we talk about this early on? Why didn't we educate the citizens of Marion County? Why didn't we give them resources and ideas and opportunities for them to, for us to, my goal as the sheriff of Marion County is I hope that we continuously reduce the number of overdoses we have. If we're reducing those numbers versus having increased numbers, which is not the trend. I mean, across the nation right now, most of the counties, I mean, especially you get out to Ohio, Indiana, different areas, there's a huge number of overdoses they have. Knock on wood, Marion County, it's a great community, a great county, and we haven't had those, but we do need to educate people because we have had the overdoses, and if we can reduce those, then that's my goal as the sheriff.
This has a whole nother dimension for you because I know you've had to stand next to the body of people that have overdosed, and you've had to tell the families of those people who have overdosed that their loved one is dead.
Yeah, it hits home, and it's very hard to do that. I look at the lives that are lost. I mean, if we were talking about drunk driving, and I mean, you have somebody that's killed in a drunk driving accident, the whole community, everybody's out there, it's like, hey, we need to reduce the amount of drunk driving we have. But the opiate side of it, people aren't familiar with it. They're not, they don't see that. They don't, you talk about prescription medications, and there's not that worry. In the sense of across the community, and we don't mean to scare people, we want to educate people. It's there's people, and like everybody said here at the table, there's a place for prescription medications, and we're not trying to tell the doctors on what they should prescribe or how much they prescribe, but we want to educate everyone, whether it be the medical field or the citizens, on the amount and what it can lead to try to prevent that.
Thanks to all of the participants of the Listening Post for contributing to the program. For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.